Broadcasting from the Biz 1190 studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Business Radio X Weekend Review. We know you're busy, so we've got you covered. Catch up on the week's top Atlanta headlines and meet the industry execs and thought leaders who move Atlanta's bottom line. Here's your host, Michael Lauer.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Biz 1190's Business Radio X Week in Review, where we share a few interviews from the past week. I'm your host, Michael Lauer. And for those of you who don't know about Business Radio X, we are all about the great stuff that businesses are doing for the economy and in the community. We have several Atlanta locations and tons of shows. So if you hear something that you like, I encourage you to head on over to businessradiox.com. Yes, that is our website, where you can stream any show live or download a show and take it with you on the road. So really, there's no excuse for you guys not to listen to us. We have tons of great interviews, lots of good stories, so check it out. The first clip we have for you guys today is from our newest studio in the heart of Buckhead. The host is Rich Casanova, and the show is Buckhead Business Radio. And he's been getting some awesome guests in the studio, show after show. So if you like what you're listening to, definitely head on over to the Buckhead page on the website and check them out. This week, we are highlighting Jeff Lovejoy with Action Coach Atlanta. And Jeff actually was the co-host with Rich on this particular show. So listen up and enjoy.
How are you this morning, Jeff?
Great, Rich. Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk about our names in a second. But first of all, you joined Action Coach, which has been around. How long has it been? Been around Action Coach a little bit. Met a few of y'all. How long has it been around?
It was started in 1992 by a guy named Brad Sugars in Australia.
That's, we'll talk about Brad. He's an amazing dude.
He is.
Now, as a coach, you help others grow their business and demystify sales, marketing, planning, profit growth, leadership, business systems, time management, and team building. That's quite a task at hand there to demystify all that. Can you do that all in less than an hour?
It's a challenge, and it's not an hour, no.
30 minutes or your money back, yeah. That's another brand.
That's right.
So now, prior to joining Action Coach, you built a successful 26-year career in sales management, project management. I was at Bank of America and Wachovia, which I think is a great mix because a lot of times business coaches that I've run across over my time is that some of them have a great knowledge level, right? And some have experience. But, I mean, and then as a franchise and part of this big brand, I mean, that's a great combination, I believe, right?
Yeah, I found it to be very helpful to have kind of a lot of the disciplines, a lot of the values that you get out of working large corporate and to be able to introduce some of those into the small business community is valuable.
Yeah. So let's jump right into it. Earlier in the week, I was talking to somebody about lead generation, so which is kind of your pipeline. That's your money, right? If you're, they say cash flow is king, right? But if you don't have anybody providing that, you know, writing you checks, then you're kind of up a creek. So in terms of lead generation, what's the what's a good strategy you might recommend for our listeners, or some advice or tips on that?
Rich, it always surprises me in talking to business owners how focused they are on lead generation activities, but yet one of the most important ones they tend to overlook, and that's developing a formal referral program. There's so many positives in favor of having a formalized referral program that often get overlooked.
Yeah, I think we, as business people, we can all attest to that without a doubt. Is there a particular one that you recommend, or is it based on, you know, cost? I mean, how do you evaluate what's a good one?
Well, the best referral programs are those that obviously generate the most leads for you.
Right. You may not even need to write that one down, right?
Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Now, most business people, I think they have this mindset. They ask for referrals. Or when, you know, I used to be in ad sales and talk about, you know, a generating business. And people would say, oh, a lot of our business comes from referrals. But can they really measure or monetize that? And how do they actually go about asking for those referrals?
Well, the latter is a big challenge for a lot of people. There's the perception that if I ask for a referral, that's kind of salesy, that's kind of pushy. If I do a good job, that the people will give me referrals naturally. I shouldn't need to ask for them. But the result is a lot of times they don't get the referrals that they would if they had asked for it. And so having that discipline and formalizing that asking is a key part of having kind of a formalized referral program. And it's a piece that, that oftentimes gets overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. So is that the primary reason why they, you know, tend to neglect, or it doesn't just happen in their business? Or
A lot of times it's that perception, I don't want to be pushy. A lot of it is, damn, I forgot to ask. So I've had a great opportunity, but I didn't ask. A lot of it is, I don't know how to ask. So there's quite a few reasons why it doesn't happen. And that's why if they can spend some time developing and formalizing it, it becomes more natural for them, and it fits into a sequential process that then makes it less apt to forget, and they can start getting better at it. The more you do it, the better you're going to get at it.
Right.
It's just a matter of getting that practice.
And I heard something. I don't know if it was at one of y'all's events or, but it was to me. It was one of those aha moments. Is this mindset in business? I think it kind of speaks to the topic we're discussing right now, is this idea of always be closing, or I just closed that deal, I just closed a business. But psychologically, is that if you change the framework to say, I just opened a new account, right? I just opened some new business. And so I think if you're thinking along that line, it's probably easier to ask for and continue that communication with those business people and ask for referrals, right? Right.
Absolutely. And one of the reasons why people don't ask for referrals is the perception that they're being pushy. And I always tell people, you know, what you need to do is you need to turn that around, and you need to think about the person giving you the referral. And by giving you a referral, they look better in the eyes of the people, assuming it's a good referral. If they have confidence in the quality of your service, they're actually doing a favor to their friends by recommending you, so because they know you're going to give good quality service versus someone else they might engage that their friend doesn't know anything about.
So for these 2% or 10 or 20% of businesses that have a current referral program in place, but it's not generating the results, how can you, as a business coach, I mean, how do you engage in that, or how do you make that happen? Or
well, there's several ways around that. One is to help them formalize it and to really make sure that it's part of their culture. The second is to train their salespeople into recognizing that this is a great source of leads for you. It's not only do you get more leads, but the leads are more apt to close because you're coming recommended by a trusted friend. Also, price tends to be less of an issue on some of a business that's referred to you because, again, the person making the referral is transferring their trust onto the person they're referring the business to, to whom they are referring. So a lot of it is kind of getting with the salespeople, helping them understand the value of referrals, teaching them, training them on how to ask for it, creating the materials, and then as well designing a program, if that's necessary, that will encourage people to pass the referrals.
Now, for a business that is successful and has a go-to referral program that's working for them, but that's the kind of their sole source they have, that's their, you know, secret sauce of developing referrals. What else could you offer? What would you say to them?
Well, it's great that they've got a referral program that's working. The danger in it, though, is that a lot of business owners tend to rely solely on referrals as their lead generation strategy, which means they're putting the future of the business, so to speak, or at least the lead generation up. It's all placed in one strategy. If that strategy starts drying up, they don't have anything else to complement or to offset that reduction in referrals. So we always suggest that you need to have multiple lead generation strategies working concurrently so that if in the event one does dry up, you've got others to start to offset that slowdown. So while it's great that they have referrals, they also need to develop other programs, other effective lead generation programs. Relying solely on one is not a good idea.
Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation where it's very specific on a certain topic, and I think people can wrap their head around and the importance of it, right? Because if you don't have a system, I mean, you're going to be struggling or even worse. So
absolutely.
Tell our listeners, Jeff, what's the best way to get in touch with you for them to find out more about your services?
Well, I've got my phone number is 770-988-1844. My cell phone is 404-444-1836. My email is jefflovejoy@actioncoach.com.
That was Rich Casanova with Action Coach's Jeff Lovejoy in our Buckhead studio. Like I said before, and I may sound like a broken record here, but bear with me, Rich has had some great guests over the past couple weeks, like Reed Hutchinson with the Private Bank of Buckhead, Danita Harn with the Harn & Associates, and Gene Wright with North Star Consulting. So if you want to hear any of those folks, or you just want to hear Rich talk some more, he's really good at it. Trust me, he'll get you in a corner, and before you know it, your whole day is gone. But you had such a great time visiting with Rich. So surf on over to our Buckhead Shows page on our Business Radio X website. Later on in the show today, we'll be visiting with Alan Wolken and Norbert Crabtree from the Sandy Springs studio and Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A in our Midtown studio. But before all that good stuff, we have Chris Abbey in the Gwinnett studio and Chad Adam in the Midtown studio right after all of this. Welcome back to Business Radio X Week in Review on Biz 1190. I'm your host, Michael Lauer, and next on deck for us this afternoon is Chris Abbey, the Business Development Manager with Revitalize Structures. This interview comes out of our Gwinnett studio on Mike Sammons and Stephen Julian's Gwinnett Business Radio Show. Now, these guys are Business Radio X veterans, so sit back and enjoy.
I would think that the business you're in is very much a relationship type business, because you're coming and you're talking to folks, and you see a building that may need some structural help, a revitalization, a modification, a restoration. They pretty much have to take your word in a way, if you know what I'm saying, because they don't know what's going on beyond their walls. They don't understand this type of thing, and you're saying, listen, you've got a problem here, so they're putting their trust into you that you're telling them the truth.
Well, that's right. And this is a relationship business. You're exactly right. We often get the calls because of the relationships that we've developed. And then when we provide the fix, having that relationship and that trust helps them appreciate that we're telling them what they need. And we can, again, back that up with the engineering to kind of prove that all out.
And one other question too, if there's a building that you, by surveying, you're saying, okay, we need to revitalize this building. You need to, we need to work with you. And they don't. I mean, what could happen with some of these older? I mean,
well, in a worst case scenario, their building falls down.
Yeah, I mean, you can't say that to the people. You can't give them the sky is falling scenario, can you?
I know, as a sales tactic, that would be great, but it's not. It's not really nice. At the same time, because we are an engineering company, if I come out and look at something and I take that information back to our engineers, and this has happened to me on a parking structure, I took the information back, the engineers looked at everything and determined they have some serious structural problems, and if left untreated, that parking deck will start to fall apart. I'm obligated at that point to let the property manager or whoever called me know that. We don't want to wind up in court, being faced with liability for something like that. So I do have to walk a line. I don't try to scare people, but I do try to tell them the truth.
Well, there's
if
a
they
difference.
Have a situation.
Yeah,
like
there's
that.
A difference between a sales tactic and, look, here's what the math says.
Right.
I mean, here's
exactly
what we
right.
we believe is going to happen.
When your steel has degraded to where it was at one time, you had a flange that was a quarter inch thick and the rust has chipped it away and now it's down to less than an eighth. That's pretty easy to just tell somebody like that in those terms.
Are you obligated then if they decide I'm not going to worry about it, are you obligated to tell some kind of a regulation authority or the state?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay.
So, I feel as though I should have an attorney present to answer these questions.
Yeah, I didn't plan to go there, but these are just interesting questions that I'm thinking of.
We do have a moral obligation and probably an obligation from liability to inform people when we see a potential danger.
Yeah, because if you're saying I recommend you really do this, or you could have some problem, and then some problems happen. I don't see how you could be liable if at least you went back and said, hey, you really need this.
Right, and whenever I do that, we do document that. In case there's ever any issue.
Chris, I'm going to bring you back into the sales side of things.
Sure.
Thank you. Stop sweating over there. So going back to being development director, you talked about relationships. I would think also this company grew out of Tendon Systems. Tendon has developed great relationships. They've been around a long time. So that obviously provided some credibility to begin. And obviously Revitalize Structure started because there was so much of a need.
That's exactly right.
Than just something that Tendon could do on the side. So let me ask you this. What's the market like? And let's just take here in Atlanta or Gwinnett County, whatever you want to say here locally. You said you cover the Southeast. How big is the market? How much stuff is out there that needs some revitalizing?
There is a lot. Atlanta has more newer buildings than maybe some places do because of all the growth in the 80s. But there are still plenty of older buildings here in the greater Atlanta area. And then all throughout the Southeast, there are plenty of older buildings that are starting to show their age or starting to get tired that need some help. So that, and with the current economy, a lot of times when a building owner or manager is facing a decision, it's a lot cheaper and less stressful to just go ahead and fix what they have rather than build something new.
That was Chris Abbey on Gwinnett Business Radio. Mike Salmon is our studio manager over in Gwinnett, and he has lots of other great shows for you to check out. Just go to the Gwinnett page on businessradiox.com. Our next clip comes out of the Midtown studio. It's Hop and Top's Chad Adams on my very own Midtown Business Radio show. Chad is in the studio with his marketing manager, Benjamin, and they had some great insights into the SEO world, which I know nothing about. Check it out. So what is Hop and Top?
Hop and Top is a internet marketing firm here in Atlanta. Moved down from Philadelphia before Thanksgiving and decided to bring it down to Atlanta and show the South what we're all about.
Cool. So you actually started Hop and Top in Philly.
Sure did. Now I have warmer weather and nicer people to hang out with.
Welcome to the South, right? So what prompted you to move from Philly?
Literally just really wanted to get to nicer weather. I love Philadelphia with all my heart. Great people, great city to be in. People are a little rude, but that's okay. You know, sometimes you just have to move to find you know, home is where the heart is.
So you moved for a lifestyle choice, not for a business aspect?
I did.
How have you found that the business community is different from Philadelphia and Atlanta, or if at all?
It is much different, as a matter of fact, and the fact that, you know, business takes just a tad bit longer here, but I think it's actually better because you get to understand the people more and understand their brand a lot more as well.
Okay, so you maybe know the companies more, but the gears move a little bit slower?
Yeah, but it's not like it's 2 months slower. It's just a couple of days slower.
Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a really important follow-up question here that I really want to ask you is, are you a Braves fan yet?
I am not a fan of baseball, unfortunately.
Okay.
I know the Phillies and Braves are both great teams. I am an Eagles fan to the fullest.
All right.
Actually, funny thing, my brother-in-law has not missed a home game for the Eagles since 1985.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he's a diehard fan.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is.
So when did you start Hop and Top?
Actually, I started Hop and Top 3 years ago, and the reason was because I had an insurance company, and I hired other companies that do SEO, and they just did not deliver. Mm-hmm. So I taught myself how to do it. So by doing that, I was extremely successful with the health insurance company, actually the fourth largest health insurance brokerage online. And so when I sold that after Obamacare went through, I decided to make the internet marketing company since I got such great results.
So did the health insurance company, did you start that as well, or were you just an employee there?
I did. I started the insurance company myself. I found a need that people needed to go quote online and see exactly, you know, what plans they'll be getting. So with that, you know, you get leads, you get to call people, and you get to talk to people and get to know them as well. But the funny thing was that, you know, just trying to, you know, obviously I didn't know anything about internet marketing. I had an insurance company. So when I hired these people, I went online, I looked online just like everybody else does. And when I hired them, I even was still living at my parents' house and decided to forego moving out to hire these people. And they just didn't deliver. So I'm thinking to myself, well, if they're not going to deliver, I got to do it myself.
How are they falling short? Like, what were they delivering on? So people at home kind of get a bearing on what your expectation was.
It's just like they would continually see promise and promise and promise that they would get you to the top, and they just didn't do it. So when I figured out that they couldn't do it, I said, well, I'm just going to do it myself. And that's what I did. And being that I was able to get on top for individual health insurance and health insurance quotes, which is very, very competitive term.
Yeah.
The second most competitive term online. I just decided that, hey, if I can do it for myself, and I know I'm not alone with other people hiring these people, I'm going to go help other businesses and actually get them the results that they deserve.
So before you started your first business and your second business, what were you doing?
Oh, my. I was in school for finance and economics. I stopped going to school after I got my bachelor's, and I was selling for other brokerages. The corporate industry was not very nice to me. Actually, my first introduction, my first week in corporate was I got more sales than anybody else, and my sales manager forgot to report my sales, so he got a $1,000 gift card instead of me. So, you know, that's kind of what happens. And I decided, well, I'm going to break off after 3 months, you know, get some training in the insurance industry, and that's what I did. And I was actually unsuccessful for 2 years. I made that website, and I became a success.
So your success started with your own company,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Sold that after mm-hmm. Obamacare, and then you started a second company, Hop and Top.
Yes, sir.
And it's been Hop and Top and all the way.
All the way to the top. There's only one number one, sir.
So the name, kind of give me a little background on the name there.
It's very memorable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Is it about hopping to the top of the search engine?
You got it.
All right. You made the connection right
exactly.
There. That was a fun interview to conduct, and we had some other great guests worth checking out in the studio that day, such as Amber Saunders with FailCon, where entrepreneurs discuss all the mistakes they made and what they learned from them. So it's a great way for entrepreneurs to share best practices and figure out what not to do. So go to the Midtown page on our website, businessradiox.com, and give it a listen. We have Alan Wolken and Norbert Crabtree right after this. Thanks for sticking with us on Business Radio X's Week in Review from the Biz 1190 Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. I'm your host, Michael Lauer, and our next clip features Alan Wolken on Michelle Matthews' Growth Matters out of our Sandy Springs studio.
Alan, why don't you tell us a little bit about how this got started? It started with your parents, your father.
My father and my mother. My father served in World War II in the 8th Air Force. And their motto was can do. And when he got out of the Army, the Air Force, he was looking for things to do. He actually ran a couple of textile manufacturing companies for other people, one of them making women's shoulder pads, which were very popular in the 50s. and he was working for his brother-in-law, but he didn't really like his brother-in-law's brother, and he said, I need to do something on my own. He had a friend in the Bronx, because they were born in New York. So he went over there one day and he said, I'd like to do something for myself. And he says, well, why don't you make baby mattresses? So where am I going to do that? And he said, well, then that family actually had a mattress company in New York on Colgate Avenue in the Bronx. And since my father had a sister in Atlanta, he said, well, why don't we try Atlanta? And these are, you know, these are pioneer days almost, you know, with no money, no job, no anything. He just moved his family to Atlanta and opened up in March of 1955. And for those of you that are familiar with Atlanta, on Ponce de Leon,
okay,
across from the old Sears, which is now probably the hottest area in town, across from the Ford factory and up the street from where the Atlanta Crackers used to play baseball. So anyway, he opened up. He actually sent for us 2 months later because he wanted to get started. And it was really a very, very hard struggle. I'm sure he almost gave up, but he was actually a smoker. He smoked 3 packs of Camels a day, non-filtered, because that's what the Army gave them in those days. And he realized after a month or so that this wasn't good for him. He didn't need doctors. He didn't need all kind of organizations telling him it wasn't good for him. He just knew it. So that's another lesson we learned from my father, his not only his honesty, integrity, hard work, motivation. He was just self-motivated. But once he said he was going to do something, he did it. Obviously, he almost gave up, like I said in the beginning, just getting customers and starting something new. It just
took out from there.
Correct. It took a while, and we remained on Ponce de Leon till about 1993, I believe. We actually there's like three buildings, and some of you might realize it's Paris on Ponce.
Right.
So as we grew, we doubled the size in 69. Took over one of the buildings, and then there was a third building on Ponce de Leon Place. So we had everything but the corner. But because of traffic and business, we realized we needed to move. And we actually decided to move and keep the business in Atlanta, a manufacturing company in Atlanta, which is kind of rare. And we surveyed all of the employees. And they wanted us to stay in Atlanta, and that's what we did. We didn't move way out to some, you know, a county far, far away. We wanted our employees to go with us.
So the entire time you've been in Atlanta?
In the city limits of Atlanta.
Wow.
And right now, so we moved to a area most of you know as Cabbage Town, which was not the greatest neighborhood at the time, but right now it is just booming. And we're in the middle of all this growth and development. We would like to say that we helped.
You helped start it off.
Yeah.
That's not. But Dennis, as someone who I guess has known this story and been around with this, tell us a little bit about your background. And did you ever think about going to work anywhere else?
Sure. Actually, I did work somewhere else after college. I went to work for Procter & Gamble for a little while and then eventually came back. I always, in high school, was encouraged to have other jobs as well as summer jobs at the factory. But I'll tell you, working in the factory was a lot harder than any of the other jobs.
Yeah. So you kind of you did that, but you also have kind of grown up in different parts of the business. You're the national sales manager right now.
Correct. National sales manager just means I get to load a truck every now and then as well.
Oh, good.
But, I brought my son in a couple of weekends ago because we work on the weekends sometimes, and brought him in, and he's 7, and I realized I had him doing the first job my grandmother ever had me doing, and that's counting coins. Wow. From the junk machine.
Wow.
So I've always been in it. I thought eventually I would always come back.
Wow.
And we're glad to have him, by the way.
Yeah.
That was Michelle Matthews with Alan Wolkin on Growth Matters. Be sure to scope out more of Michelle's shows on the Growth Matters page on our website. Also from Sandy Springs, on the High Velocity Radio Show, producer and host Kevin Finn interviews Norbert Crabtree. Trust me, this one is worth staying in the car for.
So tell us a little bit of your backstory, how you got to the point where you are, and tell us a little bit about CSP360.
Well, Bonnie and I were talking about that at lunch, and she asked about how I made the transition from investment banking. I was in the merger and acquisition industry for quite a number of years, and I told her that the transition was made for me with the events of 9/11 back in 2001. We found the credit market for M&A work went to nothing, and a good number of my clients were CPAs at the time, and I kept thinking of that old saying, death and taxes, and I thought I need to be in either one of those businesses. So it was buy a funeral home, or service the CPA industry, and I knew a lot of them, and so I decided to go into the specialty tax field, and we've been providing services for the tax industry that require an engineering expertise. So it's a very unique mix.
Definitely. So how did you go from there? What was the learning curve, sort of going from M&A and then going into the CPA? Did you have some knowledge about it beforehand, or did you just say, you know, I see a problem here, and I know this is really going to help them, so I'm going into this?
Well, full disclosure, no. I had not really looked at that side of the business. It was purely a twist of fate. through a actually a friend here in Atlanta had told me there's a firm in Buffalo that could use someone with engineering expertise and business development skills. And that's a pretty interesting combination. And I said I could do that from the days at GM when I worked there. Engineering expertise was my thing, and I certainly had been in the entrepreneurial side of business development myself. And having worked with the CPA profession, I felt like it was a pretty good transition. Yes, yes.
So did you get in sort of ground level with this pretty young company, and you've helped them grow over the years, or were they pretty much starting to get ramp up?
No, actually, Fried Maxick is a 60-year-old CPA firm, mm-hmm. so they were certainly not a novice, and they actually started the first cost segregation
okay, that's huge.
Segment of tax services. So they were probably the best known at that time, and the products continue to evolve. Kind of one of the reason we're here today, the new product evolved very much like cost segregation did, which was it's currently a very hot product, but virtually unknown 10 years ago.
All right. So how have you helped them out? How have you helped them grow? And just tell us what CSP 360 really does.
Well, the concept that I've been developing and pushing, and the reason why Bonnie and I work so closely together, is that we strive to become an extension of a CPA's practice. So we bring those specialty services that they really cannot justify having engineers sitting around on the bench, yeah. so to speak, inside a CPA firm. But more and more, there are strategies within the tax code that really require the specialization of an engineering firm. And so our goal is to lead with best practices and then develop a model for taking it to market and then helping our CPA clients put themselves in that business with the flexibility of our services and our expertise. But it's almost like a temporary help, having a temporary help firm on your Rolodex to say, hey, let's call them up.
So you guys really help with that pain point, too, that they need a specialist on staff. They can't afford it, but you're sort of that extension just helping with that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, because mm-hmm. you got these things are all evolving as we speak. Somewhere right now there could be another case working its way through the tax court that's going to involve a change in the code, and a bunch of CPAs are going to wake up one day and realize this happened, and we need to educate our clients, and how do we do that? And so we're the firm that they would go to for those specialty services and say, how do we help our clients basically figure this out?
That was Kevin Finn with Norbert Crabtree on High Velocity Radio. There are tons of shows coming out of Sandy Springs, so head over to the website and check them out, or stream all shows from a particular studio on our online player. Closing the show for us today, we have an excellent interview with Chick-fil-A's Mark Miller on our Legacy Leader radio show out of our Midtown studio. The host of that show is Jack Perry. He's an excellent speaker and does a great job of getting some guests in the studio that has some excellent things to share. And I can't wait to share this interview with you guys. Make sure you stick around. It's going to happen right after this. Welcome back to our last segment here on the Business Radio X Week in Review on Biz 1190. And this is where the gold is. I usually don't do this, but this show was so good that I'm actually going to play not one, but two clips from it today. Jack Perry and yours truly get the opportunity to interview author and businessman Mark Miller from Chick-fil-A on Jack's show, Legacy Leaders. Here's the first clip.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've heard Mark speak. I've met him on a couple of occasions in my private life and also in my professional life. And Mark is the author of several books, and they're life-changing books, and I just finished reviewing and actually reading the last one, The Heart of Leadership. And Mark, instead of me going on about this, tell us your story and tell us about the books, please.
Well, Jack, I sell chicken, and I've been selling chicken for 35 years. Joined Chick-fil-A as a teenager.
Right.
And started in a restaurant, didn't do particularly well there, but thankfully I was able to land a job at the corporate headquarters. I was the 16th corporate employee, started working in the warehouse in the mailroom.
Okay.
and have had trouble holding down a job ever since. I've worked in five or six different functions, had several career changes, and it's just been a fantastic journey.
What's the fantastic part? Tell me the ahas in there.
Well, there've been many, and that may be a good segue into the books here in just a moment. But I think one of the fantastic portions of the journey is that the organization has allowed me to learn and grow. They've challenged me to learn and grow, and they've given me a variety of opportunities. I don't know that if I turn the clock back that I could have done one thing for 35 years. But the fact that I've had different roles, different responsibilities, again, even different careers. When you move from the warehouse to start the corporate communications function, when you move from corporate communications to start the quality and customer satisfaction function, when you move from there to start, not to start, but to kind of pick up a training and development function, worked in restaurant operations for several years with consultants on our team that served the operators and tried to help them improve their P&L and customer service. So I think that variety for me has been fantastic. And it's created a lot of experience and content that has actually been fuel for some of the books I've had the privilege to work on.
Okay. So now I'm seeing it's the same umbrella, same company, the same great company, Chick-fil-A, but you've had several different positions and jobs. I'm willing to bet what's the common theme that keeps you successful in each one of those different jobs? It's got to be a common theme or a mission or a legacy there.
Well, again, you might have to ask those who've made those decisions, because I serve at the pleasure of the organization. I've never asked for a job change, and I've never turned one down. But if I had to answer the question and was really honest, I think it's hard work. I think it's hustle. I mean, I'm not the guy on the basketball team who's going to score 40, but I'm the guy who's going to get every loose ball. And kind of started my career saying, I'm just going to work hard. And I didn't know any better. That's the way my parents raised me. A quick story on that. I think it actually may be what got the attention of some of the staff early. Again, there weren't many of us. I was number 16. But I was working in the warehouse, working in the mailroom. And Dan Cathy, who is our president today, he's worn many, many hats over the years as well. He came to me and he said, when you get off work this afternoon, can you help me with a project tonight? And I said, well, sir, I'm going to school at night. I was still working to get my degree. And he said, well, what time do you get out of class? And I said, about 10. He said, well, what time could you get back here? And I said, well, I can get back here by 10:45.
That's hilarious.
And he said, great. Well, I did that a lot because I didn't know any better. And, you know, he asked me to help him with a project, and my day's full, my night's full. I'll come back after that.
What made you keep doing it? What made you do that?
Well, again, I felt like that's how I could contribute.
Right.
I
could, there you go.
I could work hard.
Yeah. Give yourself some value, right?
I could serve. I mean, it's interesting that that's kind of been a theme, again, through some of the writing. And I didn't certainly have a position of leadership, didn't even aspire for a position of leadership. But what I found over time is the more ways I found to serve and the more ways I found to add value, that opened the doors for additional ways to serve and add value. And I know it doesn't always work that way, but that's been my experience. And so I love to say yes. I love to help. And so I think hustle has been a theme for me.
After the interview, Mark sent me a copy of each of his books, and I'm telling you, I can't put them down. There are some great concepts in there, but there are also some really great stories. And if you're a manager, a leader, or someone looking to hire a leader, then you should really start your search by picking up a few of Mark's books. Chick-fil-A has been known for its excellent service and leadership, and Mark is at the heart of it, kind of like his book. Okay, that's enough of me talking. Let's get back to Jack's interview with Mark, and this next clip delves into the process of creating the type of person people will want to follow.
So how do great leaders serve? And I'm going to line out a little bit of quick outline. If you could fill in the blanks for me on this, Mark. Okay, great leaders serve. Now, in our mindset, in my experience, and people I've come across, it's difficult for people to get into that mindset that to be a great leader, you have to serve others because things can get in the way. Pride, ego, a change in view, a change in paradigm, a change in the way I look at the world. I'm the boss. I'm the leader. I'm in charge. I sign the paychecks. You do what I say. How's that working for him, Mark?
Well, we introduced a concept in that first book, and it's a metaphor that's been used in numerous arenas over time, but it's the metaphor of an iceberg. Mm-hmm. And we said, for us, that's our picture of leadership. Mm-hmm. And about 10% is above the waterline, and about 90% is below. And the 10% above are the skills or behaviors of the leader. And that's what that first book is about. Mm-hmm. It's what people learn to do. It's what people observe. It's what you do with your hands.
Right.
The 90% below represents the heart, and that's what the new book is about. I waited 10 years, and there's a backstory behind that, but we waited 10 years to actually tell the rest of the story. I asked Ken if he wanted to do it with me, and we just couldn't work the schedule out. Okay. I would have loved to have had him involved with that. So the two books, we think, tell the complete story. And so if your heart's not right, nobody cares about your skills. That's why 90% mm-hmm. is about your heart. I mean, you can probably imagine leaders that you know or have known mm-hmm. who have the skills that you would choose not to follow.
Oh, yes.
You got to believe in the cause, right?
Yeah. Well, you got to believe in the leader. I mean, right, we think that there's a question of the heart that cannot be ignored. But by the same token, you may know men and women with a tremendous heart who you wouldn't follow. Because they have no skills.
No skills to do that.
Think about a doctor or a lawyer. You want them to have skills, but you want them to have character as well. Yeah. You don't want to choose.
You're touching on something that I've personally experienced and observed myself in my career in the military and also outside the military. I have met a lot of very smart people, and they're very smart on paper, and they got a lot of initials after their last name, but do not possess the character skills. And I'm not insulting anybody listening to me today. This is open radio. they have a lot of initials after their name, very well educated, but don't have the ability to lead others. That can be sad. That could be very, very sad. What would you say to them?
Well, I'd say it's one of two things. Mm-hmm. There are some skills required to lead, and there are many smart people who have not learned those skills, mm-hmm. whether it's the skill of building a team or the skill of resolving conflict or other skills. I mean, tangible things you must do to lead well. Casting a compelling vision. If you can't cast a compelling vision, that's a skill deficit. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that could be their problem, no matter how many letters are after their name.
Yeah.
But the more probable problem is one of the heart. And that's what this new book is about.
Yeah. Right. Okay. And I think I'm kind of honing in on what you're saying here. The skills and the tools, I mean, that all can be taught, right?
Exactly.
But the heart, that's got to be discovered.
Discovered
by
is
the individual.
Good language for it, but it can also be cultivated.
Okay.
And that's part of what this book's about. If it were, I wish you had a good heart, you don't, bye-bye. That'd be no book to write.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what I believe is that although it's very difficult in adults, I mean, the best time to build leadership character into someone is when they're young.
Bingo.
It's actually a process called parenting.
The whole old dog new trick thing?
Parents are trying to raise successful adults.
Yeah.
And we're trying to put the character traits, leadership and otherwise, in them that will serve them the rest of their lives. It's not impossible with adults. It's just harder.
Right. Sure.
But you can, if you make a decision and you're willing to follow through on it, you can cultivate a new heart. And that's really what the book's about. It's full of ideas on how to change your heart.
That was Jack Perry with Mark Miller on Legacy Leaders Radio. And I wish I could play you guys some more of that interview. There's some great stuff in there. But if you want to check it out, go to the Business Radio X webpage under Legacy Leaders Radio, and it's all there, I promise. Jack's had some great shows with Wounded Warriors Project and Franklin Covey, who will be on next week. And that's all the time we have for today on Business Radio X Week in Review. I'm Michael Lauer. Thanks for putting up with me, and hopefully we'll see you guys next week. Take care.